Thank you for listening to St. Cloud Somali Radio. My name is Ben, and in this hour, we have for you a presentation, the keynote address given by Ahmed Ismail Youssef in the Immigrant Workers and Families in Minnesota Conference on the campus of St. Cloud State University at the beginning of April. His address was about the history of Somalis in Minnesota and the United States. It was a very interesting presentation towards the end. There were also questions asked by the audience, so you can get his reactions and his information, a great presentation, here for you next.
Raga socod ku awdoor, hadu mawd ku daaye. Derbi lama fadhiistiyo, halki ku daraate. Dogo nino weyan, innagu is bulchoona. Wandu layaaye. So as though you understood that, it's he. And I'm going to leave you hanging. And she says, as though you understood that again, she says, Dun yo mil kod na it so darer in my side. Dun yo mil kod na it so darer in my side. Dalkalan tegeya kabad. Dalkalan, dalkaletad kadeilei alkano gadoro. Dalkaletad kadeilei alkano gadoro. Waino dambaisa daaro hadegdegine chok. Waino dambaisa daaro hadegdegine chok. I'm still going to leave you hanging because I want you to have a taste of what it's like to hear a voice or words that exactly that you have no clue what it is about. And this is how we feel at times. But I still did a favor for you. So I just exactly tried to add a little bit of a melody so that you won't run away. So later on, you can ask me a question about that song. In early 1990s, many Minnesotan citizens noticed a trickle of conspicuously dressed Africans, especially women, in colorful attire. Some girl, some with simple hair scarves, arriving at the schools, grocery stores, supermarkets, and shopping centers, sharing both space and resources. As their number began to grow, questions arose about them. Who are those people? Where are they from? What religious faith do they belong? As time has passed, some of the questions have faded away with simple facts that they are from an East African tropical nation called Somalia, that they, the people themselves, are called Somalis, that their language is Somali, and their distinct women's attire is in deference to their faith, Islam. Then new questions replace the old ones. What was their past like? What brought them to Minnesota, and why? Those three questions in various tones tenaciously persisted. Why did they choose the icy Arctic-like Minnesota, with its acclimated Scandinavian thermal population, was the most asked. Thus, in an attempt to answer those questions, I will briefly touch on how Somalis found themselves in Minnesota, and will later on answer some questions about what brought them to this state and how they are doing now. In that, I will briefly pass through an overview of Somali history. There is no date certain in history of which Somalis declare that Somalia began. What is understood, however, is that most of what is known about Somali history does not go back much farther than the 19th century. For it was the 19th century itself that European colonials, with a clueless, careless disregard for Somali social identity, that they began dismembering our habitat in East Africa. From 1827 to 1963, the colonial powers divided Somalia into five parts: French Somaliland for the French, British Somaliland for Britain, Italian Somaliland for Italy, the Somali region of Ethiopia for the Ethiopians, and lastly, in 1963, Somali district of Kenya for the Kenyans. Riding on the wind of freedom that swept through the continent of Africa in the 1960s, however, British Somaliland and Italian Somaliland divide the odds by uniting under one flag. Somalia gained its independence, establishing its first ever government led by a president, a prime minister with a legislative parliamentary body, and a judiciary system. But 9 years later, on October 21, 1969, a group of military elites led by an educated yet a charismatic general called Mohamed Siad Barre masterminded a coup. Consolidating his power base, he allied himself with the Soviet Union, destroyed the middle class, decimated the dissent voices, and eliminated the educated elites. In 1977, Siad Barre went to war with Ethiopia, flexing a Russian-built military muscle that the rest of Africa had come to envy, marched through the Somali region of Ethiopia like a pack of wild wolves in less than 5 months. The victory, however, did not last long, and in 1978, Siad Barre had to withdraw his army in humiliation. The fallout from the Ethiopian war defeat immediately began to have an adverse effect on the regime. On October 1978, a group of military officers from the central Somalia and northeast attempted the first coup, and though they were swiftly put down, and most hastily executed, survivors fled to Ethiopia, organizing an armed opposition. In retaliation, the regime turned on its civilians, scorching cities, villages, nomad compounds, mining wells, and slaughtering livestock. Next, the Northerns began to tally their economic and human rights losses. Suddenly, a volcano of unrest exploded into the streets of their major cities. As usual, the regime took aim at the civilians, repeating the same pernicious treatment that he had prescribed to the central and northeast of Somalia. This heinous act inspired the inception of yet a second armed opposition. Soon, from the central to the south to the north of Somalia, other opponents armed themselves, for they were left with no other choice. Consequently, it did not take long before the capital city, Mogadishu, and Siad Barre in it found itself under the same cloud of brutality that he prescribed to others. In January 1991 alone, and with no army left to protect him, he fled the capital. Suddenly, in the vacuum left in the wake of Paris' departure, the ghost of revenge spewed flames of violence onto the streets of Mogadishu. With that, misery and mercilessness marched on hand in hand throughout the South. The NGO number of organizations around the globe rush to reach the hungry. But though donated aid pour in, none reach the needy. Wailing mothers and their starving babies. Mindless militia will loot the United Nations delivery trucks at will. When it seemed all hope was lost, that no one was going to care for dying poor black Muslim babies of an African nation, the world changed. Overnight, the most powerful nation declared it was going to send 27,000 troops to Mogadishu. The rest of the world followed. Operation Restore Hope is swelled into a 37 multinational military muscle that descended on the southern Somali beach in September of 1992. The children were fed, but this was impossible in Mogadishu. There, USA Navy SEALs were sent to apprehend one of the troublemakers, but his fighters successfully shot down two Black Hawk helicopters. 18 American servicemen lost their lives along with hundreds of Somalis that no one knows about. Some of you may remember that. The body of one American serviceman was dragged through the streets of Mogadishu and widely viewed by millions through international news. The mission to capture a renegade warlord turned out to be a disaster for both Somalia and America. Soon thereafter, in March 25, 1994, President Bill Clinton ordered all Americans out of Somalia. Again, the rest of the world followed. Somalia was left to wallow and rot in its self-inflicted wounds. In total, after 21 years of a repressive regime's ruthless war on its people, the convulsion that was let loose in the last days of Paris' grip, the pernicious fall that ensued, and the spasm of brutality orchestrated by the warlords made the country, particularly the South, a hell hole. With danger all around them, the civilians had no alternative but to get out of harm's way. They moved in concert out of Somali cities. Every possible means of transportation was used, but the majority trusted their feet to carry them to safety. They trekked to Ethiopia and Kenya on lines that stretched to the horizon. As time went on, misery was the only consistent companion that they could count on. Consequently, an estimated of 1 to 2 million Somalis fled to the neighboring countries. Out of Somalia and to the Western world now. As a result, deeply distraught about the loss of a nation and burdened by the tragically still raging civil war back at home, the first Somali refugees started to arrive in the United States at the beginning of 1990s in states like Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, Georgia, Maryland, Arizona, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Michigan. In other words, every other state but not Minnesota. I don't know what we had against Minnesota at the beginning. Because the voluntary agencies with years of experience in resettlement usually prefer to place new arrivals in areas where their fellow countrymen are concentrated. And Somalis were not known in large numbers in any state then. But some of the agencies noted that San Diego, California, had a small community of Somali refugees who had settled there after the Ethiopia-Somali War of 1977. Thus, a larger number than most of any other states went to San Diego. Reasonably, Somalis in other states who were not able to get to San Diego took the next best option, establishing a line of communication with San Diego Somali community. Thus, the city became the capital city of news center, what we call WARP. Establishing line of communication, okay. Now I lost where I was. That's how they trade news. They will call San Diego and just exactly say, where are jobs? Who serves refugee? Because that San Diego group now spoke English, and possibly that they had the ability exactly to look for information if they did not have it. So whoever was not there just would call if they were not there. However, both all the Somali communities and the new arrivals in San Diego were quite disturbed by the scarcity of jobs in 1990. If you could remember, 1990s, the country was in recession, and the proof of that was just that President Bush, the senior Bush, actually lost his re-election bid to someone of a governor from an unknown, from a small state, to Bill Clinton, because of the recession itself. So, there, Somalis actually met the apathy of joblessness head on. They were just exactly saying, okay, we go into the United States, there will be a rivers of money or jobs. But of course, they just exactly met that apathy of joblessness head on. A ray of hope begins to shine. In early summer of 1990, a poultry company called Heart of America in Marshall, Minnesota, added a third shift to their turkey processing plant and wanted to stop it. Thus, on May 20th, 1992, it put an ad that appeared in Argus Leader, Sioux Falls, South Dakota newspaper. So remember that there are all Somalis in San Diego or elsewhere are still looking for jobs or news about jobs. Four Somali men from Sioux Falls responded and showed up at the plant the very next day. They were hired the same day, and we're told that overtime was available as well, that if they had friends, they should come to apply too. The plan was hiring. The word that those four sent back to Sioux Falls was pleasantly surprising, that all four, with their poor English, lack of factory skills and experience, were hired right at the spot. Furthermore, the plant still needed more people, and it was poultry, not pork. The headline read, four Somali men got jobs with overtime, experience and English were not necessary. That headline trickled to the center of War Mill in San Diego, the news center of San Diego. That is exactly what they got. That foreman got jobs. Experience and English was not necessary, no skills needed. But questions about the reliability of the news remained. Yet the news persisted and stayed alive. After 2 months, it was time to send out a team of scouts to test the validity of this vain hope. that rose from Sioux Falls. So Scout in Somali, ultimate Sahan group, hot on a faint trail of war, the news about Chavez and Marshall, Minnesota, four bachelor men from San Diego hopped into a car, like their nomad forefathers had done for thousands of years, in search of greener pasture. The Sahan group from San Diego was charged with the responsibility to authenticate the news. After 32 hours of driving, they reached Sioux Falls, Alice. Arriving at the lunchtime that they were told to dredge on, the city with Chubbs was called Marshall, Minnesota, not Sioux Falls. In late July of 1990, they were at the doorsteps of Marshall's poultry processing plant. And though close to 30 other Somalis were already there, all four were hired right on the spot. As Sahan in Somali culture dictates, the first group of scouts should have aggregated the risks against the ultimate economic advantages and then endorsed the community's relocation when it's a greener pasture was confirmed. Back at home, however, they would have traveled on foot or on horseback to share the good news. But now, in this country, there had been a twist to that central cultural piece. They delivered the news by the phone or on the phone or emails. They don't have to ride horses or walk. The headline news that rippled through the Somali war mill read, four men from San Diego got jobs with overtime where experience and English were not necessary. The confirmation bell now rang louder. And once more, when yet another group, this time another three Somalis, also from San Diego, followed the first one, they were hired too. The bell rang louder and even louder. Soon, the exciting and hopeful news was being spoken in every ear. Calls reverberated with resonance of hope through a community that was desperate for one. The wails of their loved ones in refugee camps and nauseating, gnawing cries back in Somalia were urging them on. So, now, anybody who was in that predicament in San Diego was heading to Marshall, Minnesota, or thinking about how to get there. So I'm digressing a bit, just to give you a context. At the height of the recession in 1992, the national unemployment rate was 7.5%. In Minnesota, though, it was 5.6, a much lower rate than the national average. And it kept on sliding, where at one point in 1998, it reached as low as 2% in Minnesota. On top of it, the southwestern Minnesota and the western part population was aging. Thus, a shortage in workforce was imminently apparent. So, due to their nomadic survival instincts, Somalis found the right state at the right time. Unfortunately for them, Minnesota economy kept growing faster than it was the rest of the country, while the number of Somalis coming to this state from other states as well as from refugee camps continued to rise. So, in Marshall, Minnesota, Somalis discovered other meat processing plants in Trichester, Bellican Farley, just to name a few. Bellican Rabbits, Wilmer. So they just exactly kept on searching other opportunities. As the number of Somalis arriving from San Diego surged, the news about Chavez spread wider into other states, while Minnesota continued to observe this eager migrating force and in process laid bare a host of other employment opportunities like hospitality industry, rental car businesses, janitorials, food beverage, parking, lot attendants, taxi drivers, and assembly line workers. Soon, social service providers, teachers, accountants, interpreters, and business-minded group followed. The semiconductor industry, such as companies as Seagate, Honeywell, ADC, IBM, also began to hire. The more Somalis numbers grew, the larger the pool of employment opportunities and the better their choices became. Consequently, it did not take long for the skilled professionals to stumble on the news of the rapidly rising Somali population in Minnesota. So they too start trailing the herd with a sense of urgency, some for their self-interest, but others for selfless reasons of duty to their countrymen as well. The doctors, the professors, a few other professionals also just exactly said, well, it's time to serve these needy people. So they also came. Now, why do we stay? I'm digressing again, but for example, as the mayor of Minnesota was motivated by sincere desire to remedy a social injustice, Hubert Humphrey muscled together the strongest and fairest fair employment practices commission in the country, and established a committee of human rights relations to protect minorities, African Americans and Jews in 1947. Why am I saying that? With that, Humphrey laid the foundation for a livability that will irrigate the soil of Martisor. Oh, 5 minutes. Martisor meaning. So, Minnesota's hospitality for the refugee goes back as far as 1947-48, when the Displaced Persons Act was signed into a law. They stayed offered to receive the displaced World War II refugees from Eastern Europe. And then in 1975, we also know after the Vietnam War, we know that South Asians came here. We know the Hmong, actually the largest Hmong community is here. Also the largest Oromo community is here. The Liberians are here as well. So just because of Minnesota, the word Minnesota nice, it's not just a simple word. It is just that most of, or a lot of Somalis are appreciative, that exactly, that this is also not policy, but a particular feeling that exactly Somalis just came to know that there are people that who is still welcoming them here. So, in that, trying to say a few words about Somalis in Minnesota, I could not help but marvel at the similar image depicted perhaps the most coded lines of MLSRs in the New Colossus. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. This time, however, it is not in Ellis Island, New York, but the land of 10,000 lakes. And the people are not Europeans, but Africans, African Muslims, who have arrived at the gates, who have arrived at the gates of the great state of Minnesota, testifying to the fact that America is still the land of the huddled masses yearning to breathe free. So, despite the unbearable past, an indomitable human spirits live in Somalis too. So, they in Minnesota salvage what is decent of their cultural heritage and use it to find the most hospitable states in the Union. That's actually in their words. They came to Minnesota because opportunities, job opportunities, those were jobs that they could do without the due burden of employment skills and language fluency, jobs to which employers appreciated assigning them. Those huddled masses of taxi drivers, hotel maids, janitors, and yes, even welfare mothers, I dare to say, see their children graduating from college, navigating through the system like the rest of Americans, speaking English with an American accent, and they are proud of them. So they came, they ceased, and they settled. Somalis came to Minnesota when war or news about vibrant job market had reached them. They seized the opportunity when Sahan or Scouts confirmed it. And they settled here when Minnesotans offered them martisor or hospitality. You bet you, they are part and parcel of Minnesota now. I'm done. Now, I will be able to take a few questions, and please be nice to me, okay? I don't speak English.
Oh, I'm sorry. Professor Tomes. You knew that was coming.
I was hoping that you were going to forget that. Well, as a matter of fact, it is a song that resonates well with us, or actually with me, because it says, I told you I don't speak English. Actually, it says that what it is just exactly trying to tell you is that Somalis only wanted to leave their country just to earn a few dollars and to come back. So there is the man is just exactly lamenting the fact that he lost all his livestock. And he's just saying that I'm going to go away. I'm just going to earn a few dollars and then we'll purchase camels and sheep and whatever. And the wife is just exactly saying, listen, you idiot, stay here, okay? Better days ahead, so you have to wait and stay here. So, in other words, we had no inclination, we had no intention to leave what we used to call home until all of a sudden help broke loose on us. And I could tell you actually, for example, I'm lucky to have some of my fellow countrymen, not only countrymen, the same city that I'm from, the same school that I'm from, Ahmed Salavan is here. And actually you have the largest, also you have the largest community in my particular city. So I salute you, which is exactly hosting them. Okay, so I have to be, yes. They are in St. Cloud. What a coincidence. Anybody else?
When they first came over to the United States, was it all social classes or was there any, you know, certain groups, you know, maybe like the more educated or anything or the wealthy that came over first, or was it all people across all classes?
Yes, it was the wealthy that who came first because some of them were going to school, some of them actually had the money to spend. So the last people or the last group that who arrived were exactly the poor, the people that who were forced out of their homes. Yeah.
What, can you say a tiny bit more about why that was? Why did the, because in some ways it would make sense that it would go the opposite, that the poor people would feel the pressure first.
I think Because the sense of belongings, I mean, the people were still hopeful, so they were just, and they didn't have anywhere to go. But the people that who actually had the means to leave just exactly left, whether they were waiting or they were able, they were mobile, they were actually able to leave. Or once they sensed the danger around them, they were able to get away. Where on the other hand, anybody that who did not have means just exactly had to wait somebody else to rescue them. They did not have a choice. Okay. San Diego, the group, yes, in a way or no. So the San Diego group were a group that who ran away from the war of 1977. There was a war between Somalia and Ethiopia. That war displaced a particular Somali ethnic group in Ethiopia. So they went first to Somalia. Then some of them were just resettled in the United States. But on the other hand, though, also the Somalis, educated Somalis, also were just exactly expelled from Somalia because of that coup. Whoever the group or the particular tribe that people came from just try also to escape the hardship. So their middle class or their educated ones just left there. And that was the central Somalia, actually northeast of Somalia. And then the northern part of Somalia was just exactly facing the same thing. And then also their middle class and educated left. But those educated then were not able to get to the United States. The United States was still supporting the regime. So they went to Europe until the Soviet Union fell apart. United States did not recognize Somalia as a problematic or a refugee. Yeah, they didn't recognize the problem at all. Okay.
Okay, my question is the difference between Somalis who live in greater Minnesota and those who live in the metropolitan area. Is there a difference in education? My understanding, and from what you said, obviously, the meatpacking plants don't require a great deal of English or education, but those who live in the Twin Cities probably are working in different kinds of industries.
Well, it is really hard to tell right now because, yes, in Somalia you could follow the segmentation, but here, somehow or the other, we are all scattered to some extent. Even those that who started getting jobs the small cities. Yes, we could tell that exactly that they were the least educated. But on the other hand, they also moved to the city. And there are others that were just exactly moving away from the cities and just going to the suburbs, those that were able to live there. So it's in that particular question, I'm not exactly sure how to distinguish one group from the other. And it's still difficult to tell.
A question kind of related to previous question is, how does the differences, if there are differences about between or among tribes and clans, plays a role in today's first generation and second generation Somali in greater Minnesota, in Minnesota in general? I'm very curious because this is a new topic for me, so I would like to know today's how the tribes and clan differences or not, how they play a role in today's Minnesota first generation and second generation.
First generation and second generation, I think we are still first generation, but on the other hand, it is not exactly as vivid or quite apparent that it is back home, even though what we normally say is I'm sorry, there are students here, but sorry about the word that I'm just going to use, disregard that, even though I said it. We use a word where we say that if somebody farts in Somalia, we smelt it here. In other words, the political turmoil that it is just exactly going on back home has a tinge of a taste in us. But on the other hand, it does not overpower us. It is just that here, to some extent, even though there are a little bit of associations, tribal associations. It is here we are all Somalis. It's here there are, I think what he used the book is just that whatever that was salvageable in our culture is still employed here. So if non-Somalis ask us what tribe we belong, we will laugh at you. Even though everybody knows that we are tribal, and we don't like to answer that question. In a way, we just exactly know that there is a negative connotation to it. So even though that exactly it has a touch of a political rebel in us, I mean, in other words, it doesn't have that much of an effect on us. Oh, here was there one? Okay, two more, okay.
I was just going to ask you about connections here to St. Cloud in terms of from your understanding of tracing it, did many folks who come to St. Cloud come through Marshall, through San Diego? Has that changed in terms of directly from Somalia? And how has that evolved or the connections to here?
This actually, yes, it evolved. And as a matter of fact, the first man that who came to St. Cloud is my friend here, Ahmed Salaman. So he's right there. So actually, he's able to answer the question better than I do. But actually, it changed the way that they arrived in Marshall, Minnesota, because he was actually one of the educated. I mean, he's scholar educated when he came to the United States, which was not the case for the people that were in Marshall, Minnesota. So yeah, that itself is evolving. That itself is just exactly changing year after the other.
And are more and more people who are coming now, are they coming just the range of education and the range of places they're coming from?
The range, yes. They are coming from all. First of all, it is the second migration that it filled this state, actually. So is right now there are Somalis that who are leaving the state, not many, by the way, because we created, I think, opportunities for ourselves, within ourselves. So that itself became an attraction. Not many in that terms actually live in the state, but yes, they come from Europe, they come from other states. Not many are coming from home now, actually. It quieted down a bit.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi.
My name is Abdi, and I'm a student at St. Cloud State. And
Somali Batai. Are you Somali?
Yes.
Okay.
My family also from Marshall, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And we came to St. Cloud, and we went to school here. And the question I want to ask you is, a lot of Somali families now, the question the parents have is, since the Somali is oral language, and the question is, do you think Somali's oral language, the kids who were born here or grew up here, they might have difficulties in the Somali language or in the future? And my second question is, do you think that since Somali might get better, the Somalis might go back to Somalia in the future?
Okay. The first question is, how much Somali do you yourself know?
I know a lot, but I'm sure that compared to my parents, you know.
Yeah, do you think you're missing a lot, or do you think that you speak sufficient Somali? And in that case, if you are not speaking sufficient Somali, what is it that you think that you are missing?
Not only me, I'm also...
I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
I know a lot of Somali, but I'm also talking about in the future. Let's say my kids, you know, what kind of Somali they...
Well, I can tell you that, yes, Somali language is very rich language, and I would like everyone what I'm saying is, you Americans are not included. Meaning that, yes, you have enough of your own, but meaning that in Somalis, those of us that who are from Somalia, yes, in order to be connected to that culture and to your identity, yes, you should speak the language. But on the other hand, the reality of it is just that, yes, our language is not going to survive, whether we like it or not. My son, I brag about my authority in Somali language, but my son doesn't speak a word of Somali, not a single word. As a matter of fact, his Somali is just making noises and just speaking loud. He says, it just sounds. He says, Somalis speak like that. Abo, I'm speaking, Dad, I'm speaking in Somali. Raising his voice is speaking Somali. So I know that exactly we're losing that, but it is very, very, very important if you can speak, if you can actually learn whatever you do. Yes, that's your key to your cultural background. On the other hand, the people that who were born here, they are Americans also. I mean, yes, you may dress, you may look like, you may call yourself a Somali. You may actually dress like a Somali. The rest of the community may just exactly think that you are Somali. But believe me, those of us that who call themselves first generation see the difference. It is just day and night how much of you is American, even including yourself.
And his second question was the people planning to go. The last question, his last question was about whether, what was the plan of once Somalia get better, if he does. Yeah.
There are few that who will go back, but, you know, this is home. It is, whoever goes back, yes, there are very few of us that are going to go back. But, or most of us will say a lot more than, that we could imagine will say that they will go back. But the reality is different. Believe me, those that will go back to, will it stay there for a few months? You will find them here next year or next month. Particularly the kids that who grew up here. Forget about even the old generation, but the kids particularly. Yes.
Yes, I have a question. I was looking into Somali history as well and discovered the Asmania alphabet and another other alphabets and clear evidence of quite a lot of literary activity all the way back. And as an ESL teacher, I was taught that Somalis never were literate until they came here and we helped them. And so I'd like to correct that. And I'm wondering if there is some way, you're talking about losing Somali language, if there's some way to keep the history and allow it to be taught in the schools here so we all know what really happened. So my question is, what are we doing to allow our local histories, all of our local histories, to be taught in schools in an authentic and accurate way? I talked to a principal at a junior high, and she said, well, it's not in the MCA, it's not in the exam, so we can't teach that. Maybe you could do something after school. And it seemed to me a public education ought to contain some of the things that you're talking about. I have some direct questions for you later about where did Siad Barre get his edge and some of the earliest history of the independent Somalia, and maybe some of that would be, I really have some genuine questions there to talk to you later, but it seems like Osmania, the alphabets are downloadable on the internet, as well as some Native American languages and some, I mean, there's a whole lot we could do with our curriculum in our public schools with our tax money that would really help people to remember their culture even if the language is gone.
Sure.
So I'd like to, you know, I wonder what's being done that way.
Well, at least in my case, I'm just exactly trying to, whatever that, writing about it is just exactly one way just to battle against that. Talking about it, of which I am actually a group of Somalis that were just also trying to keep the language alive, even though that I'm just exactly saying that it is going to fade away. Yes, I am a member of that group too. So we do concerts, we do playwriting, we just do a lot of talking and I think we are out of time, but yes, we are just, yes, we don't want that to happen. So we are trying our best. Yes, I agree. I absolutely agree.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This was, yes.
And this is St. Cloud Somali Radio. That was a speech, the keynote address to the Immigrant Workers and Families in Minnesota Conference on St. Cloud State University's campus back at the beginning of April from Ahmed Ismail Youssef. We'll get back to our music programming after this.